Okay, well, this is the John Ream. This is the March edition, episode number 7 of the Ream, Bennett, and Moore Workers' Compensation Watch podcast, Zoomcast, and introduce everybody here, starting with our near birthday person, Roger.
Oh, Roger Moore.
All right. Todd, you want to introduce yourself?
Todd Bennett, Fit and Fiddle.
All right, yeah, and walking 6 miles a day, allegedly. So,
yep,
good for you. And finally, Rod.
Yep, Rod Ream.
Okay. Well, let's get down to our podcast here. Wanted to talk today about IMEs, or what we're in the trade are known as independent medical examinations. But what we're going to talk about, aren't necessarily truly IMEs. We're going to talk about employer. What's going on here? Some echoes in the background. We're going to talk about employer set up medical examinations in workers' compensation cases, and why your employers want you to go to these medical examinations, can they make you go, and maybe a little bit about, different types of some unusual types of examinations, and then a little bit maybe about actual IMEs and sometimes examinations that we'll set up for our clients. So to our birthday person, near birthday person, Roger, in your experience, your vast experience, when typically in a case do you see the insurance company wanting to set our clients up for medical examinations?
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons they might do that, but the short answer is that whenever they set you up for a doctor of their choosing, and they're not independent by any stretch of the imagination, they're trying to create an issue about something, whether it's a causation issue for the doctor to address. Oftentimes they'll do it if there's a surgery recommendation, or if they just get sick of paying you for being off of work and they want a doctor to weigh in on whether you can work. They can get involved in whether the jobs are appropriate once you've been released at full duty or MMI. And they can also weigh in on the impairment rating that's appropriate for your injury as well. So it's a bad thing when they set you up for an independent medical examination because they're not willing to trust what the treating physician is recommending. There's a good potential that they're trying to create an issue that's going to need court involvement or an attorney involvement at some point.
All right. And by impairment rating, when somebody gets an impairment rating, that tends to come at the end of treatment.
Yeah, right? Backside of the case. In a lot of cases, that might be where the final compensation for the permanent injury that you have comes in. That's kind of where the rubber hits the road on a lot of the cases. So that's an important issue that comes up, that their insurance company is willing to spend thousands of dollars for their doctor to weigh in on, to get a lower rating than what the treating doctor might be recommending.
Sure. I kind of think when you get to down MMI, I kind of think that's that when you get an impairment rating, I think that's kind of the beginning of the end of the case,
Yeah.
It's like the beginning of the last chapter of the case is when you get done and then they give you this rating, then everything else kind of starts falling into place or getting ready to get the case resolved. Todd or Rod, thoughts on why insurers, anything else to say as to why employers and insurers set people up for medical examinations?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. The ratings we talked about a little bit ago are from a book that's published by the American Medical Association that's had many editions. And the ones that we deal with mostly are the 5th edition and the 6th edition. And the insurance company always wants to get the rating from the 6th edition book because it is much lower. The same injury to a knee that's evaluated by the 5th edition criteria versus the second, the sixth, could be the difference between like a 10 or 15% and 2%. And the insurance companies have to pay based on whatever rating is accepted by the court or ordered by the court, or they can just pick which rating they want to pay on. And they use the heck out of friendly IME doctors that use the sixth edition to get low ratings to limit how much they have to pay our clients.
Yeah. Todd?
Well, and that's a good example of really what this defense exam is all about is, you know, on a kind of a broader spec, it's what's the purpose of it, who's going to benefit from it, and what they use it for. Because if it's important for an injured worker, they're not going to ask somebody that they hire. You know, for injured workers, you want your treating doctor and you want a doctor you can trust, and especially the one who's treating it. So when an insurance company sends you the letter, hey, we set you up with our own exam for a doctor that we chose. Well, then what's the purpose of the exam? Who's paying it? Who's going to benefit from it? And what are they going to use it for? And these tools of what they use it for, if they think they're paying you temporary benefits while you're off work too long, well, they want to get an opinion that's going to cut you off to maximum healing so they can stop paying you temporary. And then, as Rod said, you know, if they think the rating's too high from your treating physician, they're going to send you to their doctor to say it's much lower. And then it's used for what body part you hurt. You know, if you got two or three body parts that you hurt, but they only think one is related, well, they're going to find an opinion that says it's only one injury, for example, a neck, and not a shoulder and a hand. So it's kind of those three things. Who's going to benefit from it?
Another one is work restrictions, because on injuries that affect your whole body, which are mostly back and neck injuries, you really get paid for what kind of work you're able to do after the injury. And the insurance industry and their lawyers select doctors that give ratings that are favorable, or work restrictions that are favorable to the insurance industry. I sometimes say the IME doctors are like a football coach, you kind of pat them on the back and back in the game kind of doctors, because if a doctor says there's no restrictions and you have a back injury, you don't get paid anything regardless of how bad you feel and regardless of what your own doctor says about avoiding lifting and twisting and things like that. And these exams are expensive in the insurance industry, to give you an idea how valuable they are. I have seen them pay up to $14,000 for a doctor's exam to say that a person could go back to work. It's ridiculous. And they have, you know, resources that human beings can only dream about. The insurance industry is, you know, multi-billion, probably trillion-dollar industry funding these exams.
$14,000 would be 10 stimulus payments. So just as a FYI, that's what that amounts to. But you talked about work restrictions, and I'm going to skip a little out of order. A lot of times work restrictions are set by functional capacity evaluations, which are tests of your strength and endurance and things like that. In my experience, the employers will also pick preferred providers for functional capacity evaluations. Now, most of the time you have to go to an IME that the doctor sets up. I think you have to go to the FCEs too. I mean, but employers set up the FCEs. What's been some of your other experiences with employers setting up FCEs to kind of, like Rod says, to minimize permanent restrictions for injured workers?
Yeah, I think it's important for the workers to understand that there's kind of an underbelly network of these doctors and FC providers that are out there. These are entities that market themselves to insurance companies by bragging about how low ratings they give and, you know, how they can find causation issues. And the FCs as well, there's certainly one in Omaha in particular that has a much higher rate of what we would call an invalid result that can't be relied upon. I've had a couple of judges that have not found that employees have to go to the FCE because there's nothing in the statute that talks about the FCE specifically. So I always try to agree upon an FCE to go to if we're going to go that route. But I want to backtrack just a little bit because when we're talking about these IMEs, a lot of times they'll send out questionnaires, the doctor's offices will, for the workers to fill out before they even get to the examination. And I've seen questionnaires that a purely physical injury that talks about psychological issues they may have had, criminal background and things of that nature. So I generally don't even have my clients fill those out because it's just an invasion of privacy. It's another way for the doctors to put things in their reports that the judges are going to see to kind of ping an injured worker. So there definitely is that underbelly, and anybody that the insurance company sends you to is not going to be independent in any stretch of that imagination or that word.
And I don't think those questionnaires are allowable as discovery either, right? You know, because the rules of discovery apply in workers' comp, at least in Nebraska, which, you know, in my opinion, gives employers a basis maybe to send you to an FCE, but certainly not to answer those do more paperwork and homework when it comes to these questionnaires for IMEs. Yeah, I mean, they can, because what happens with them is the lawyers who are paying the $14,000, they're going to send a bunch of paperwork and records to those doctors in advance anyway, and they should know what the case is about just from the paperwork that they get. So yeah, that's a good point about those questionnaires.
Just to kind of expand upon that, it actually creates a significant conflict, adversarial confrontation with the injured worker and the administration, nurses and front desk people at these offices, because a lot of times, like merit evaluators in Omaha, they're so ruthless, they yell at an injured worker to say, "We're not going to see if you don't fill this out." So they feel compelled that they fill it out because they're going to do something wrong. And at least me personally, I instruct in every case up front 2 or 3 times. Look, my clients are not going to sign those documents. They're not going to fill them out. This is a defense exam that they've hired. Their obligation is to provide all the questions and material, records and otherwise, of what they want their physician to review. An injured worker just has an obligation to show up. Certainly no obligation to sign a form that says if the bill doesn't get paid, they're financially responsible. Because a lot of times, like merit evaluators will do that. But that is a good point, because it creates a confrontation where an injured worker feels compelled to fill it out because they don't want to look like they're doing something wrong or not cooperating.
You know, it's this IME thing, and the defense medical exam, which is a better way to put it, DME, is kind of built into the system. There's a statute that says our clients have to attend these exams from time to time if that's a reasonable request. And it's hard to fight one unless they're really abusing it. I mean, but sometimes we run into cases where they'll send people out over a long-standing case, you know, if they've been hurt 3 or 4 years and in treatment, they may try to have them examined 4 or 5 times. And some of our judges will say, no, you can't do that. But some of them will let them do it.
And I think you got the nail on the head, Brian. You know,
part of the problem is that doctors don't like getting involved in lawsuits. So the treating doctors, many of them, don't want to give these ratings because it takes time away from treating their patients. And that's kind of created a vacuum that this industry that Todd talked about a little bit ago, these IME guys and gals, are out there to fill a gap. And it's frustrating. Some states, I think, require treating doctors to give impairment ratings, but our law doesn't. It makes a mess. And I also don't want to be accused by somebody who watches this from the other side of the table of exaggerating the cost. The $14,000 was an extreme example. I've run into that kind of number once in 40-some years doing this work. But the typical cost for getting an opinion from a doctor is startling to our worker clients. if I want to talk to the treating doctor, most treating doctors will charge me $250 to $500 for a 15-minute conversation because their time is valuable. And the insurance companies are paying these guys probably on average $1,000 to $2,000 for to read records and write a report. That's hard for the worker to afford because those are costs that you can't get back in court. That's the advantage of all that money that the insurance industry brings to bear on these cases.
And I think that's kind of, you hit the nail on the head with what is reasonable. Because, you know, one of the John's questions, John, you pose is, do they have to go? Well, the statute requires them, they have to go from time to time. But what is reasonable is also how many times they go. Is it reasonable what time of day they go? Is it conflicting with the work schedule? Is it requiring somebody from Lincoln to travel to North Platte? I've actually had that before where we argued, look, you're sending them, you know, 4 to 6 hours away from to North Platte and in Fort Collins, Colorado, but you're not paying mileage, a day's pay or a motel or food and so forth. So it's really what's reasonable. But yeah, typically an injured worker has to go, or they, you know, if their reason for not going is unreasonable, well, then they can have a suspension of benefits if they're receiving weekly checks at that time. So it really is a confrontational period that it's all based on the facts and what is reasonable.
Yeah, I agree on that. Now, there actually are real IMEs in Nebraska, I mean, actual independent medical examinations, but those are hard to get. In Nebraska, you don't get an IME, you know, where the employer pays it. You don't get it unless you've approved causation or causations they've stipulated to that, and there's a actual conflict over the extent of the medical issue. So that's hard. Those are hard to get. I mean, in fact, I mean, most of the time you're getting IMEs if the issue is, you know, solely a medical one. Usually you can't, you know, you have to get the IME before you go to hearing on a medical, and every once in a while we run into that issue. Anybody have any luck with the court IME process in Nebraska?
I can't remember the last time I've done one because it really boils down who's on the list. Mm-hmm. And that list is usually pretty bad that the court maintains. And it's nothing the court does. It's just who's willing to be on the list. And a lot of them are the same insurance people that we see from time to time.
So the IME list has a lot of general doctors who don't have the paper resume to fight with the back specialist and the hand specialist that the insurance company hires. And that's basically the vast majority of the free list are, you know, at least on paper, have less credentials and less horsepower in court than the specialist.
And
I'm a little bit worried that we're being so negative. It's how the hell do we ever win with these obstacles? But I mean, there are doctors out there that do stand up for their patients, and there are ways to delay these IMEs and fight these IMEs to kind of keep things under control. But that's what kind of battles are fought day to day in the workers' comp court. There's all kinds of medical questions that these IMEs can answer and stretch out the defense and delay payment and pay less than they have to pay and get people to take settlements to avoid losing their house.
Yeah. Sure. And there are lots of treating doctors that are willing to review these DME reports and provide some counter arguments to what they're trying to say as well. So you're not at the mercy of the insurance company when you have a treating physician that's on your side, willing to stick up for you. That's what we can help provide, I think.
Yeah, and the big part of it is they must be afraid of what the treating doc is actually willing to say or is saying. Otherwise, why would they go buy an exam? You know. So on the flip side, it's a credibility issue. If you see the same people saying the same things, all it is for hope somebody doesn't fight and go away. You just got to be willing to fight for what you think you're entitled to, or fight for your right.
Well, and our judges do protect workers too. I mean, frankly, their job is to decide things. There's seven judges that hear all the workers' comp cases in the state of Nebraska, and they see these IME doctors revolve through the cases day in and day out from the insurance industry. And that, and their judgment is affected by whether they think the expert is fair or bought.
I got one question for you, Oz, because I get it repeatedly, is can an injured worker record the examination of the doctor inside this defense exam process?
I think they can. In Nebraska, if one party consents to tape recording a conversation, that's legal. So if your client has a telephone, the recorder or a recorder, they can do it. It's legal.
Yeah. But you have to disclose it to the other side. I mean, because it's a recording, and it's something that, you know, I think that with the insurance company would absolutely, I think we'd absolutely have to disclose that. That's the other
after
thing.
After the fact, recording. Yes. Yeah, you know, not beforehand, after the fact.
Yeah. So, you know,
I also get to, a lot of people, I think, when they're sent for these evaluations, they think if they go in there and they're honest and they tell this doctor everything that they think is important about the case, and how they got hurt and everything else about their pre-existing history, that they're going to change this doctor's mind. You know, I tell people, don't waste your time doing this. We treat it like a deposition. Go in, sit down, shut up. And if the doctor asks you a question, give them a short, quick response. Don't explain anything, because the odds are, in the vast majority of these situations, nothing that you say is going to make this doctor go in favor of you if they've already made up their mind, which I think I'm confident they do most of the time when the client walks in, they've already made up their mind having reviewed the evidence. So don't waste your time and spend any more time in there than you need to, because it's not going to change the end result.
And I do think what's important with kind of to finish that line, Roger, though, is they're still going to be watching. For example, some of them, they're going to watch an injured worker from the door, from the window. They'll have a nurse just solely designed to observe that injured worker from the minute they get to the parking lot to the minute they get in their car and leave. So it's one thing, like, for example, hey, I limp all the time, and then they see you one time, might be taking your pills or something, and you're feeling better, and it doesn't look like you're limping. You do got to be accurate in what you're telling them in and out of the appointment, because they are watching.
Including support staff.
Yeah.
Not just nurses. I mean,
they're also videotaping people walk into doctors' offices.
Right.
That's another topic we need to talk about sometime.
Right. And I guess the last thing I want to say on this is, especially in the era of this pandemic, is this year alone, I think I've had a half a dozen of what they call telehealth defense exams. And it's important because, for example, merit evaluators will have a person show up, and it's a nurse or a PA doing the exam while an orthopedic doctor is on video. In the second example, it was a hand doctor who's actually doing a back examination on it with a video of a doctor, believe it or not, in Kearney, Nebraska, who's a back doctor, but the exam is happening by a hand physician in Omaha. And you got to look at what's reasonable, what's credible, and what's persuasive. So don't be shook up by this, because that actually looks horrible in front of a judge.
So, well, any other final thoughts about the issues of independent examinations, either defense exams, actual independent medical exams? Any other thoughts on the issue?
Just be aware and don't be deceived that this is that those exams are for your benefit, that the insurance companies request.
Yeah,
don't get fooled.
One other thing about the FCEs too, these 4-hour tests that a therapist administers, they're, some of these are kind of set up to make it more likely that you're going to fail. So everything that they ask you to do, you need to take seriously. I think something like 60 to 70% of the criteria testing that they do to make sure you're giving full effort are based upon grip strength. So if you've got a back injury or a shoulder injury or a knee injury, you might go in thinking, well, what the hell am I doing this for? I'm just going to kind of wing it. But oftentimes those are what makes the testing invalid. So everything that you do when you walk in that door, you need to take seriously and give full effort on, or it could come back to bite you.
Yeah. Heartbeat's real important in that. Yeah. They measure that. I was just
going to say your heart beats per minute. They're monitoring that to see if it actually increases if you're giving effort. So if they tell you to stop, don't stop. You got to keep going and do as much as you can.
The other thing about FCEs is there's this trick that they're like, you know, they try to get people to, you know, stop if they're hurting. And, you know, that's another thing that, you know, that they'll turn back. Well, they limit because they're hurting, and they'll use that against the worker. I kind of tell my clients, you should probably be sore after that FCE, you know, and dress like you're going to go exercise, right. You know. So, yeah, get put in a real quandary when they go to these FCEs that are set up by employers. It's a really difficult situation.
Right.
Yeah, and I have been in depositions with therapists or seen reports where they've downgraded somebody because they stopped when they told them to stop. I mean, that's just the stupidest thing I may have ever heard of. But they, from their standpoint, they think if you stop immediately, that means maybe you weren't giving full effort. Whereas if they tell you to stop and you keep trying to power through and get that extra rep or do that extra movement, that for them is an indication that you're giving full effort, as goofy as that might sound.
Yeah. Then the word I'm always looking for in functional capacity examinations is competitive effort. I see that one in like raises and heart rates. I feel good about the examination. The heart rate thing is really important because that's something that
right. Is
really the most objective measure in these tests. And then there's a difference between objective and subjective, you know, actual things you can measure versus opinions. And if you boil it down, a lot of the FCEs are just opinions. And you can have two different FCEs on the same person, and they can show much different restrictions. So
I just had that case where I had a client of mine have an FCE in the morning with one provider and an FCE in the afternoon with another, and the results were remarkably different.
Well, I think the last comment for me is, you know, many times people say, well, can I get my own second opinion? And frankly, I hate that word second opinion because there is no such thing. You can go out and hire your own doctor or go seek someone, but you're going to pay that bill if you go out and do it on your own. If it's a surgical consult, that's something that you get your own family doctor to refer for a surgical consult, because an insurance company has to pay for a surgical consult. If it's simply to get a higher percentage, then you're paying for your evaluation to have somebody treat and evaluate you separately from perhaps your treating doctor or somebody else. There's just a misconception that everybody's entitled to a second opinion. It's just, you're going to pay for that word second opinion.
Well, in Nebraska, yeah, you're not. In other states, though, sometimes you can. I know, for example, in Georgia, they have it where if you're getting permanent disability benefits, let's say you go in and you hurt your ankle or your shoulder, or you have where they're paying out to you something, during that time period, you can have somebody else take a look at you under a panel. So, I mean, again, it kind of goes to a panel. So you might be able to get a second opinion in another or your own independent evaluation in another state and bring that into a Nebraska case. So right. We don't have that benefit in Nebraska unless you can jump through the hoops and get yourself a free examination, which is very difficult in Nebraska. So,
all right. John, thanks for putting this together.
You bet. Yeah,
sure. Roger, any final thoughts?
I got the joke to end the inquiry. Right. So an elderly gentleman, let's just call him Rod, just for the sake of the joke, goes to his doctor for his annual examination, and the doctor looks him over and does tests and says, you look great, Rod, you're taking care of yourself, you're in great shape, but I want to ask you, how's your relationship with God? And Rod says, well, I've got a great relationship with God, When I go to the bathroom at night, it's when I open that door, there's a white light, and I'm sure God's with me, and he's taking care of me and looking after him. He said, well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. And he goes home. The doctor calls Rod's wife and says, you know, saw Rod today. He looks great. And I was really happy to learn that he had a great relationship with God, and that what God shows him the light when he goes up tonight in the bathroom, and the things are going great. His wife said, gosh dang it, he's peeing in the fridge again.
Good.
Nice.
Good joke,
I appreciate that respect. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you're going to be 50 next year, so we're going to be telling those jokes about it. And I'm 45, so we're all over the age discrimination limit. We do not condone age discrimination at
That's right.
this law firm at all. So
nothing but love. Nothing but love, my brother.
All right. Okay.
All right, gentlemen.
Talk to you guys later. Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.